The healthcare system is broken, but it doesn't have to be. This is Revenue Cycle Optimized by Infinix Healthcare. We discuss the latest challenges in the revenue cycle space and provide actionable tips on how to overcome them at your organization.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Office Hours. Today, it's just going to be me, no guest, so to speak, today, but I'm your host, Stuart Newsom, Vice President of Marketing here at Infinix. And just recently, in the last couple of weeks, I've attended a few conferences, notably the HIMSS annual conference that was held in Orlando, Florida this year. And then I also got an opportunity to spend some time with the Alabama HFMA. They held a denials boot camp, which was a one-day event the week after HIMSS. And it was interesting how there was common themes between the two. So we just thought it'd be a good idea to do a summary of both of those, some of the key takeaways that we developed out of both of those shows. I wasn't the only one that attended HIMSS. We had quite a few from our organization who was there just chatting with a lot of our clients, a lot of prospects, as well as other people in the industry and how they're tackling certain issues. We did a number of interviews as well. You may have seen those on LinkedIn or maybe in some social where there was some video taken with some interviews with some healthcare media as well. So I encourage you to go check those out if you haven't already. But we'll dive right in with HIMSS. Let's start off with that because that came first. And as you can imagine, the prominent subject matter was artificial intelligence. Can you imagine that? It's like every single session had something to do with artificial intelligence. It was very rare to find a session that did not include some aspect of AI. So that just means it's everywhere. It's on everyone's mind. It has a lot of emotion that people are still having around artificial intelligence. But there was also some dilution, if you will. In other words, since it was everywhere, it was almost like, oh, we got to hear another narrative regarding AI, you know, and how is this going to benefit me? I will say the vast majority of the subject matter, even from the keynotes, even to some individual sessions, revolved around how it's being utilized or how it can be utilized within healthcare, of all aspects of healthcare, you name it, not just revenue cycle management, which is going to be our focus today, but also in delivery of care, some decision-making aspects and things of that nature. And it just seemed also in the exhibit hall, everywhere I went, there was also, you know, sessions in the exhibit hall that you could attend, but it seemed that everywhere I turned, there were signage and booth graphics revolving around powered by AI or AI driven. That terminology seemed to be everywhere. And that's kind of where I'm talking about with maybe some overuse and dilution with the term AI, so to speak, or artificial intelligence. It really leads us to ask the question, and many people did ask questions, well, what do you mean? What type of AI are you utilizing? So it's kind of like RCM. I remember way back, kind of dating myself, when revenue cycle management hit the scene. And it seems to be the same thing. Everywhere you turn, everyone's a revenue cycle management company. But everyone on this particular call today will understand that that could mean different things, different stages to different people. Same goes for AI. So anytime we see that, you need to ask additional questions. You know, what does it mean? Is it a genuine AI application or is it just some superficial use of the term? And that seemed to be something that I started intentionally asking a lot of folks around the exhibit hall and as well as other attendees what they were looking for. And one of the things that resonated there was a term that was generative AI. And that's not a new term, and neither is AI in and of itself. So to me, you know, if you heard me speak before, you know, I like to define terms and kind of go over, okay, what are we talking about here? What's the reality here? There's still this notion out there that AI is a relatively new thing. And it's not. It's actually been around not only just in the last recent years for a good while, but it was actually first coined by a guy named John McCarthy back in 1956. There was this event called the Dartmouth Conference, and that's where a lot of people think that's the birthplace of AI. Anybody that's an AI expert should probably know that. And at the time, the vision was to create machines that could simulate various aspects of human intelligence. Now, that was at the time. And McCarthy actually defined that as it's that AI, artificial intelligence, was a computer science dedicated to creating systems capable of performing tasks that typically require human intelligence. Sounds very familiar to that definition today, but we're talking 1956. We're talking almost 70 years has gone by that this has actually been around. And I know I may be harming on this a little bit more than I probably should, but it just goes to show that you really need to ask questions. What do you mean? Are you talking about just rudimentary computer routines, which what we all are used to with programming as technology has advanced? Because that's essentially what it is. It's computer programming. Now, generative AI is a little different. We'll get to that in just a second. But there are certain tasks that make things easier. We all use Outlook. Outlook, you can set rules to where you want certain emails that as they receive into your inbox, where they may want to go, whether it's to the trash, whether it's junk, or whether it's something that you want to just categorize and come to later, or you just want to file away later. I use it all the time. So it's really setting up a rule. Well, a lot of people these days would not consider that as AI or artificial intelligence, but in a roundabout way, it really is a notion of that, so to speak. Now, generative AI, on the other hand, is a subset of artificial intelligence. And it's really, if you want to think about it, creating new content, things like text or images or music. ChatGPT with the DALL-E application is able to do this. Even can generate some music from some kind of synthetic data that resembles what a human would generate in that content. So it operates on the principle of understanding and learning from a vast amount of data, and then using that understanding to generate new original content. So it still has to have information. It can't just, you can't just feed it information with nothing to go on, and it's actually going to generate that new content for you. So there still has to be a basis of knowledge that has to be there. A lot of that may call that machine learning, where it's learning, where you're dumping data in there that it wants to use as a basis, or whether it's accumulating data from its own experience. Now we're sounding more like humans, because that's the way humans learn. That's the way humans grow up, from the times that we were infants and going through childhood, adolescence, and on into adulthood. We learn from our experiences, and we're able to create content. And on that note, we can use music as an example. Is anything really original? Because there's some people who think that there's really no new music in the world. It's all just renderings of music they've heard in the past, but it's just a new assembly of that. So we can dive and split hairs over this as much as we want, but the fact of the matter is AI is here to stay. And I think everyone in the room and everyone at HIMSS really acknowledge that it's not going away, and that we need to learn how to leverage it and utilize it. Some of the things that I attended all were looking around how they can leverage AI, really looking from the fear factor. You know, is everyone educated enough to understand this and how to utilize it? It's kind of like fire. Is it something that's going to damage us if it gets out of control, or can we control it to where we can use it for cooking our food or warming us or, you know, purifying things? So just like fire is used by human resources, we can also use AI in that demand as well. One of the sessions I turned to, because I wanted to go and understand what the government had to say about this, there was actually a U.S. congressional panel that I attended. And, you know, expecting maybe some congressmen sitting up there on the panel, it was actually some congressional aides that were there. And they were young congressional aides, you know, in their mid to late 20s, probably early 30s, extremely smart people. All of them were in the healthcare field, looking at legislation, advancing legislation, collaborating on items in healthcare. And when it came to the subject of AI, you could really tell that they all agreed, and were all really bipartisan on this, that they were really relying on the industry to set those standards and references. And in essence, they didn't really have a whole lot of knowledge. You know, some stated we still have a lot to learn. We still are trying to figure this out. It's still relatively new, which, as I pointed out earlier, that it's not really so new. Probably should have saw this coming. And many of them references Biden's initiative on AI. Because if you recall, President Biden back in last year, just in April 2023, had put an emphasis on ethical AI, also AI regulation and oversight. He was looking at investing in AI research. There was also a focus on AI for national security, and then some international collaboration on AI, and then developing some education for AI. Now, fast forward 6 months, just in October 2023, he declared an executive order that he signed that wanted to manage that risk and safety and security. But still, when you heard these panel from the U.S. congressional panel speaking on this, there was this air of uncertainty. And that can be very fearful in and of itself, but we're all having to learn. So all stakeholders have to be a part of this, was the lesson that I took away from that, especially when the government is someone that most of us would like to look to set some standards. No, it's really those in the healthcare industry that need to set those standards. And it's input and a collaboration from everyone. It's from providers, you know, physicians. It's from hospital administrators. It's from practice administrators. It's from coders. It's from those who work denials. It's for those who do prior authorizations. It's for those who do patient monitoring. And it's even some patient advocates as well. You know, everyone's going to have to be involved in understanding, okay, well, where can we take this? Because it is starting to outpace a lot of the capabilities, and there is so much that generative AI can actually accomplish. Because back in 1956, you know, they didn't really have the processing speed we have now. They didn't have the capacity of memory and of storing all this information. There were a lot of limitations, and there are limitations today. Can you imagine how far we've come in 70 years and how much further we're going to go just in the next 10 years? It's going to be astonishing, in my opinion. So from that, it was really just a case of making sure that what the overwhelming feeling was that a lot of the attendees had. And there was a couple of sessions that addressed that. One of the things was that hospital administrators seemed to be challenged with facing the influx of numerous technological solutions. There's a lot of solutions out there. Again, going back to my visit in the exhibit hall where everything was AI. Well, they got to sort through what was truly AI, what's truly going to solve our problems. So first, they have to recognize what are the problems you're facing and how do you think AI can help with that? And then go to the solution experts and ask them questions about how are you utilizing AI, truly AI, talking about machine learning, talking about generative AI, talking about things that are going to mediate task redundancies, to cut down on what humans have to obviously do over and over and over again so they can focus on things that may be more important. And not only was the overwhelming of the solutions that are coming at them all day long to solve problems, but also the adoption of solutions they've already purchased. We found that there was an underutilization of solutions that they'd already put in place, but the adoption was not what it was expected. People just weren't using it in their organization. So they had to do an audit on how it was being utilized, which wasted more time. Perhaps the ramp up of the solution wasn't what they expected. Perhaps there were a lot of bugs and then integration issues involved. And so this actually added to that burden where there's a lot of competing and conflicting things coming at them regarding their technology and what solution they needed to find. So the solution that actually was just strategic long-term planning. I think a lot of the emphasis was, I got to get up to speed now on all of this. I got to get up to speed on AI. I got to get up to speed on the latest regulations, the latest policy changes. I got to get up to speed on how I can solve the problem of my staff being short. I got to get up to speed on making sure that we're retaining revenue and monies, you know, managing denials. You know, how are we going into a preventive mode, which I'm going to get into in just a second. So it's really that long-term plan. You need to prioritize what's the most important that you can actually accomplish now with some low-hanging fruit, what is working for an adoption standpoint, and spend less on that, and then go towards those solutions that you can implement much faster rather than taking on a huge project that may take a longer time that prevents another project that could have been done much faster. And a lot of times this takes, you know, maybe a 3 to 5 year plan. I didn't see any plan that was suggested that was talking 6 months. You know, we're talking long term. And I'm not talking one solution taking 3 to 5 years. I'm talking about implementing everything you would possibly need. Now think about that. That's 3 to 5 years. A lot can change in 3 to 5 years. So your plan needs to be agile. What you plan today in your 3 to 5 year plan for implementing all these solutions may be totally different 2 years from now. So you'll have to adjust those plans accordingly. So These are some of the challenges that were also addressed at the HIMSS conference. Now, there was many, many more, but I really do want to jump into the next conference that I attended was the Alabama HFMA, which was held in Montgomery, Alabama, and it was a denials boot camp, and it was extremely interesting how it fell in line with all the narrative that was being discussed at HIMSS. It was actually a very excellent conference that was driven by panels of healthcare attorneys, healthcare consultants, foes of large health systems, patient access managers of large health systems, denials managers, everyone that you could think of that was having all these problems that should have been asked while at HIMSS, but weren't, and how they can leverage AI. What were the concerns about AI? One of the leading concerns that they had was the fact that many payers are using AI to deny claims. And that's very, very scary. Everyone in the room was very fearful of that. And what were we going to do about it? It was really, to an extent, the concern was so great that they were just at a loss, it seemed at the beginning, as to what we're going to do about it. But there were answers that they already had that were going to play out throughout the day. One of the things that was astonishing was not only were payers using AI to deny claims today, but they were also using that technology to go back retroactively and try and recoup payments based on that were already paid. And many of us are already used to this. We know that Medicare does this through their CERT program. They'll do an audit of their contractors that adjudicate claims for themselves. Again, I'm talking Medicare only, but other private payers do the same thing. They want to make sure that the claims were paid appropriately. And if they find that they weren't, they're going to recoup that money. Where they're now even using AI for that as well. Now, the questions to be asked is, does this AI have the right machine learning models employed? Do they have recent policies employed in there? Where are those policies coming from? Who is feeding this information into the AI model? Because again, it's a model that they have to base that on. And what goes in that model is going to determine what's denying the claims. And that model is also going to determine what to retroactively go after and recoup revenue that you've already been paid. So this was the main fear that was in the room. And then it quickly switched to, well, how can we be proactive and defensive in this and using AI? So the message was, we're going to fight fire with fire. If the payers are using AI, then we're going to have to adopt AI. So really stressing that growing necessity for a defensive and proactive approach in using AI to ensure that the correct claim is submitted to begin with and taking a preventive measure, so to speak. Denials prevention. That's something that anyone knows me, I've been preaching for a very, very long time. And it really requires putting this earlier on in the process. And there's already been technology out there. Again, going back to the Outlook example that I expressed, there are things in healthcare where you can build rules, whether it's claim edits, encounter edits, whether you're pulling information from the EHR at the EHR level, and that information is coming over, you can set up rules that can even automate certain tasks. One example I have is, let's say the physician chooses a 99204 and it's an established patient. Well, the coder is going to have to correct that. Well, that's a mundane task that can be automated and has been automated in some instances using a bot or using a certain rule that will just flip that. Well, this is an established patient. We're going to change this to the 99214 rather than a 204. So that's one very simple example, but a lot of this can be very complex and it's totally able to automate the process. So not only creating rules, but create some automations. And some other examples are you can automate prior authorizations and leveraging real-time insurance discovery, insurance payer mapping, so to speak. This actually improves efficiency and a lot of accuracy, so to speak. We do that here at Infinix. We create a lot of automations within our solutions and also are able to create automations that maybe are outside the core of our solutions because we will listen to the client. We'll listen to the problems that our clients are having, and then we'll sit down and collaborate on, well, how can we solve those problems? Is automation the right thing to do? Sometimes it's not. Are setting up rules the right thing to do? Does this need to go into a machine model to where you can actually use the same data that the payers are using to now adjudicate your claims, then how does that model get updated? So the next aspect of that, it then rolled into leveraging what was predictive AI. This is not a new term either, but there's a term kind of like generative AI where it's creating new content. Predictive AI is predicting what the outcome is going to be before action is taken. And that action can be automated. It can be non-automated with human intervention, whatever the case may be. But predictive AI is where a lot of power can be had, especially within the RCM workflow, particularly if it's potential to anticipate claim outcomes and inform those proactive denial prevention strategies that you need to put further up the RCM workflow. So we discussed this pretty much ad nauseum, and it was a very hot topic. It got a lot of energy into the room, so to speak. I was very excited about it, being the RCM nerd that I am. But this predictive capability, you know, can also prioritize denials management, focusing on claims with higher probabilities of payment. That's another thing that we're able to do here at Infinix that we have in what we call our AR denials management solution, where we're able to take a look at the denials and predict from machine learning models on the behavior of payers and what they've paid denials. And we can actually look at the probability of that payment and prioritize which denials need to be worked based on that predictive analysis. So you're not just using the old standard of, well, I got to file this because the timely filing is going to expire on it soon and it's a high dollar amount. Well, in many cases, you may be wasting time on those. So that predictive analysis of AI is not only going to help you get your reimbursement faster, but it also help you in your denials processes. Other areas we could look at from a prior authorization standpoint, where we could look at predictability on whether clinicals are going to be needed, or even a predictability of whether a prior authorization is even needed. Again, leveraging those machine models with that data. It's much more complex than what I'm stating here today, but believe me, it can work to the advantages of many CFOs, many RCM managers, many the patient access managers as well, can now leverage AI and turn the table, so to speak, on the payers who are also using AI. One last thing that we talked about as well was the power of contract negotiation. And I'm going to briefly spend a short time on this because it doesn't really involve AI, but it's some really good sound advice on that everything starts with your contract. Your denials and really can go back to, well, you know, what does the contract say? Okay, so contracts are a legal document that it binds everyone and keeps everyone accountable. But in many cases, the insurance companies seem to do whatever they want to do. So one thing was you need to remove evergreen clauses and auto renewals. You just want to make sure that you're intentionally looking at what's in the contract and renegotiating that every single year. There are a lot of contracts out there that still have the old language from 5-10 years ago, but they're on auto renewal. But the because of technology, the payer is acting in a totally different way. Are there cyber attack exemptions? This was fresh on everyone's mind because of what happened recently with the cyber tech attack with Change, obviously. But just stressing the importance that, hey, if there's a cyber attack, you know, what's the accountability of the payer? What happens to our claims? Does the timely filing end? When are we going to get paid? You know, these are questions that need to be asked when you have that cyber attack exemption. Also, maybe limiting medical record request. It seems like that was a problem where every time the carrier makes a medical record request, they make it over and over and over again for different reasons. And you can put in your contract, well, we're going to limit how many medical record requests you have because you already had a medical record from the first request, right? And then making sure that they're adopting legal and government changes, and not only that you are adopting those government changes as well. Then timely filing waivers. This kind of goes back to the cyber attack exemption, but obviously also maybe some complex cases or inquiries that are being done regarding those medical record requests, for instance. And you can put in some timely filing waivers. You can also have some fair balance with that timely filing, that they have a certain amount of time that they must answer your appeals, that they must rectify your denials when you resubmit, rather than it seems like the shoes on the foot where it's up to the provider to have a lot of timely filing and a lot of deadlines on when they can actually submit appeals, but it should be retroactive as well. And also make sure that all your medical necessity is reviewed from a specific standpoint and not just a general medical necessity across the board. Make sure that a lot of players that are on the same page with those specialists, with those from the relevant fields involved, and make sure that you have an advocate at the table. And then speaking of advocates, it was also discussed about having dispute resolution mechanisms built into the contract as well, that you feel satisfied. Is it arbitration? What dispute resolutions are in place? Is it the payer saying it's our way or the highway? Or do you have a say in what's going on? So there's a lot of power in that and making sure you renegotiate those contracts. And those were just a few of the suggestions. We spent about 2 or 3 hours just going over those. So I really did a very highlight summary on that. And perhaps we'll do another session on that specifically down the road. But lastly, at this conference, and I can't emphasize this enough, I've been saying this for years as well, it's the power of collaboration. With all the AI involved, with all of the software solutions and tech that's involved, it still requires people getting together and collaborating on these issues. I can't underscore the value of regular collaborative meetings among all stakeholders. It means everyone getting in the boat and rowing in the same direction and effectively communicating. It just takes good old-fashioned communication, and that applies to anything. And if you're not communicating, then everything falls apart. So everyone collaborating, everyone coming together and stating, here are my problems in my department, and then talking about them and how it affects other departments, how the encounter visit affects the coders, and how the coders and what they do may affect the claims being submitted. And then it comes back with denials. What's going on from an AI perspective? What's going on from a technology perspective? Goes back to being overwhelmed, where CFOs and practice administrators are being hit from all these solutions coming at them and forcing adoption. Again, it takes collaboration. You have to communicate, setting expectations, holding everyone accountable, no matter what status and what position they have in your practice or your hospital or health system. Everyone has accountable with the same standards, that having some type of equity across the board that holds everyone accountable. Now, at the end of the day, AI is here to stay. I can say the faster everyone adopts it and climbs on board, I encourage everyone to get educated as much as possible regarding AI. It can be a very useful tool when used in the right way. And like I've always said, there's still this fear as well that AI is going to replace people, but AI is not supposed to replace humans. It's supposed to augment humans, just like any other tool we've used and developed over the years that augmented our labor. It's just to make things easier, cut down a redundancy, routine task, so it can help save time and build efficiencies. Now, with that, I believe we're just going to check right now, see if there's any questions. Someone's asking the question of, when it comes to speaking with vendors specifically about building bots or machine learning or task using AI, how would you measure the ROI for that? Well, that did come up at the Denials Bootcamp conference. And one of the things was, since it's still a brand new technology, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West out there right now. So there's really no standard. Everyone's just trying to feel out, you know, what's the market value for building a bot? What's the market value for building a routine for something that you want specifically? Rather than buying a whole solution, maybe I just want to piece this together. So there are a lot of subcontractors out there right now, would call them mavericks, but not mavericks in a bad way. But they are kind of setting the standard. I think the sentiment in the room was that they're at least collaborating on it and everyone's being reasonable about what that cost is, because you have really nothing to go by, you know, on what it should cost to build a bot or build a machine learning model. And so they are being pretty reasonable about that. And I say that would probably be standardized across the realm. But when you're looking at ROI, you just got to look at the time savings, the money that you're going to be recouping as well because of those time savings, and evaluate that against the cost of having that performed. And you can just put it out for bid, because like I said, it is kind of the Wild Wild West right now. And a lot of folks are new to the game. And I mean new, I mean several years. They actually know what they're doing, but it's making sure that it's going to be beneficial to you in the long run. Right, here's one more question. How does AI help with prior authorizations for laboratory tests for walk-in patients? Well, just like anything, I think if you have a walk-in patient, some prior authorizations, you know, as we know, may take a little time. And a lot of that time can be spent by, you know, you have to be on the phone, maybe use faxes. Yes, we're in a world where we're still faxing, it seems like. But the biggest advantage would be having those APIs. You know, the final rule came out recently about how Medicare was going to adopt these APIs. Here at Infinix, we've been had direct connect APIs with a lot of payers. And then once you submit the prior authorization, even if you submit it with stat, there still may be some delays. Not sure about any, if the answer you're looking for is real time, because it's a walk-in patient, you got to know if that prior authorization is going to be adequate or not. In a perfect world, yep, it should be real time. And I think the technology is there where it can be real time. But still, there may be some hiccups where that prior authorization is still going to take a day or so, if not a couple of hours. But the capability is there where AI can definitely help with that, particularly with that, whether prior authorization is even needed to begin with. Because right now, in order for you to find out if a prior authorization is needed, yeah, you're doing eligibility checking, which is certainly something we do here at Infinix as well with the use of AI. But you have to contact that insurance company to find out even if there is a prior authorization. And that could take time. So you can actually have a tool that says, you know, prior authorization is not even needed, you can proceed. Or it is needed, then you can go through with Direct Connect APIs. So with that, this concludes this week's session of Office Hours. I really appreciate everyone who joined us today. We had quite a crowd. I really appreciate everyone being here. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. Subscribe to get notified when our next episode is online. For more information for how we can help you increase reimbursements at your company, check out our website at infinix.com. That's infinx.com.